I'd like to call the meeting to order. This is the Integration Revenue meeting. Just want to thank each and every one of you for showing up today. Hopefully we will have a good discussion. Some of the things that I just want to make mention as we go along here is that we have several presenters today. We're each giving them 10 minutes to have discussion on this integration revenue. We want to hear from you, from your districts, but we also want to hear some suggestions you may have to follow up on this, because we are at the end of these committee hearings, we are going to be coming up with some legislation that we want to go forward on. So please, if you have some suggestions when you're presenting, please suggest those to us, and we were going to take those very much in consideration. Some of our members, we have to excuse them, and some will be returning in a few moments, but some of the obligations that they had with either the governor, some of the members' families got ill, and so on and so forth. So we'll figure this out, but we want to start with saying we had invited several districts. One of the districts that could not attend today is Duluth. They had another commitment today, so and there's others that have called and said that they're sorry that they couldn't partake in this revenue program. So we want to go forward, and again, thank you for showing up. I hope we have a very fruitful conversation on what integration revenue funding is about. I hope you had a chance to look at the legislation report on the integration funding. Again, with your comments, concerns, and what the integration funding is all about, I hope we can come together and give some good legislation as we go on. So with no further ado, I'm going to call up the first presenter, Dr. Daniel Jett. He's the superintendent from West Metro Education Program. Welcome, sir, and if you would please say your name and what district you're from, for the record.
My name is Dr. Daniel Jett, superintendent, West Metro Education Program, Edina, Minnesota.
Welcome.
Thank you. Chairman Dominguez and committee members, first, my thanks to my fellow presenters today and to Shannon. I have to be back in Crystal for a 5:15 Joint Powers Board meeting, and I have 22 board members waiting for me at 5:15. So, allowing me to go first is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I'd like to go through a very brief PowerPoint. I have a copy of it at your place and for other committee members. The West Metro Education Program tends to go by the nickname of WEMEP, and sometimes it's a little strange because it doesn't really have WE in it as a word, but it's WMEP, that's our initials. And sometimes people ask, what is a WEMEP? Well, WEMEP is not a thing, it is a joint powers organization. And that is the mission that our 11-member districts have adopted and work towards. The independent school districts that form WEMEP are as listed. This shows the geographical region that is covered by our organization. And we are funded first through tuition through our magnet schools, second through special education, federal title programs, etc. Third, you'll notice, is WEMEP member district contributions of integration revenue, and that's obviously the subject of discussion today. And we also receive some funds through federal voluntary school choice grants to the state of Minnesota and the federal government. The next question we often get is, so what does WEMEP do? Well, WEMEP does what's listed. First, we operate two magnet schools. One is named FAIR, and the other is named Interdistrict Downtown School, or IDDS. Secondly, we operate the Suburban Choice of Yours program that serves Minneapolis students from low-income families. Third, we deliver adult learning activities through a variety of mechanisms that I'll speak briefly about in a moment. Third, we provide other student learning opportunities to our member district students in addition to our magnet schools. And fifth, we provide regional equity and anti-racism leadership for our school boards, their staff, and schools. Let's go back and review what we do and get a little more specific. Under Magnet School, this is our inner-district downtown school. It houses 600 students, grades K through 12, located at 10th and Hennepin Avenue. Our second school is known as SARE, which is Fine Arts Interdisciplinary Resource School, a 560-student school, grades 4 through 8, is an arts magnet school located in Crystal. The Choice is Yours program currently has about 2,120 students from Minneapolis who qualify, whose families qualify for free and reduced lunches, and each day they attend school in suburban districts of their choice that are our member districts. Next, we, last year, provided training, and there's a catalog at your place. You can look at the variety of courses we offer for both licensed staff, non-licensed staff, principals, school board members, etc. And last year, we had training for about 1,500 staff members in our district. We also work closely with our member districts and with the National Urban Alliance for Effective Education. We are training 663 member district participants, and the program is operating in 36 of our member district schools. We also have about 315 member districts participating in Beyond Diversity, which is an introduction to courageous conversations and a foundation for deinstitutionalizing racism and eliminating the racial achievement learning gap. We also offer a program for students and communities called Elder Wisdom Children's Song, which is an intergenerational program as well as an interracial program in which elders in our communities are celebrated by the children in their schools. Finally, we had over 600 students participate in our WEMF Summer Scholar Institute, which is summer school. So we operate that for 6 weeks at our two magnet schools for students in our magnet schools as well as students in our member schools. The last, number five on my list, was equity and excellence. This is a new focus for our organization, and if you get a chance and go back to the first page of this presentation, you'll see the mission of the West Metro Education Program, and our governance board believes we should be providing regional leadership in anti-racism and equity. We talk about equity from the perspective of this isn't one of the most important things, it's not the most important thing we do, what on earth would be? If we're not the people to do it, who would be the ones to do it? And if now is not the time, when on earth would be the right time to create schools that are equitable and excellent? We define equity as raising the achievement of all students by narrowing the gap between the highest and lowest performing students and by eliminating predictability and disproportionality of the students in those high and lower performing groups. Excellence, just so we are on the same page in terms of knowing what we mean, persistent and sustained high levels of performance, not only by students, but by staff as well, going beyond minimal standards in professional performance and student academic achievement. And finally, we believe that these characteristics attain to an equitable school district and equitable school. That's pretty quick. So that's what we do, that's who we are. The integration revenue that flows through member districts to WEMF supports the adult learning program. It establishes the district office for leadership positions such as mine. We have 130 employees total who man the schools and who support the program. And we find that by leveraging our resources, by bringing together the integration money from those 11 districts, we are able to impact quite a number of folks in our communities and our communities as a whole. I didn't do the math of adding up all those numbers, but it's 2,100 in one program and 1,500 in another and 600 in another. That's quite an impact over the course of 12 months. What we say is that no one of our programs is so dramatic and stand out, although they're very good. We think, though, it is the combination of those programs that truly makes us unique and a powerful, important part of our school community. Now, if I could comment on the Office of the Legislature's report, I think you asked us for some comments, and then I'll be happy to answer questions. Without going through the entire report, I think the way I'd like to approach it is, if I were asked a question that had a yes and an explanation, here's what my answers would be, and you have to know what the questions are from the answers. Yes, the department should, and now is providing more support, oversight, and guidance to the program. And the department would be the Department of Education. And you'll recall that was one of the recommendations. We agree with that. Yes, that should happen, and indeed, it is happening. The next question our next answer is yes. There may be different interpretations of the purposes of the desegregation rule, and if more clarity and specificity can be provided by the department or by the legislature, that surely would be helpful. We agree. Third, yes, from observing the programs, you'll find that the programs and services vary widely. However, in a local control environment, it seems to us that's to be expected. What should be common are the expected outcomes, and the processes used to accomplish the outcomes can vary without detriment to the intent of the program. So the fact that there's variety in programs in and of itself, from our perspective, is not necessarily a negative, as long as the outcomes are consistent. The next answer is, I don't know. And the question is there supplanting that takes place in the use of integration revenue? I don't know that. However, we intentionally avoid doing that, and we encourage our member districts to do the same, and the department has responsibility to work with us to make sure we're being true to the intent of the use of the funds and so forth under the current rules and regulations. The next answer is to the question, should the program be continued or expanded? And yes, we believe it should. I'd like to have an opportunity to come back to the committee sometime. I'd like to bring our evaluation reports. We have detailed evaluations that we try to answer the so what. In other words, I showed you a number of things we do, and it's legitimate for you to say, and so what? So what are the outcomes? So what difference does it make? And we'd love to share that with you, because one of our goals is to make sure we have rigorous evaluation of everything we do. And we're about the business of doing that. And then finally, yes, if you ask, we would be very pleased to participate in any further consideration of revisions to the current DSEG rules. And I'm sorry, I don't have specific 1, 2, 3 recommendations for you, because I find it takes a bit of discussion. It's not easy to say, well, I think we can just do this, without talking through the intended outcomes, the unintended outcomes, the trade-off that may take place, and so forth. That being said, we would love to participate in ongoing conversation about any changes that might be under consideration for the DSEG rule. And with that, I hope I'm going to spend my 10 minutes, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
I just might add, we were have presence here with Representative Carlos Mariani. This is on the committee also. Mr. Mariani, do you have any questions?
Mr. Chair, and I apologize for arriving late. Just two real quick questions, Dr. Jack. In terms of the question of MDE oversight, just very briefly, what, from your vantage point, what is the most helpful type of service that the department can provide in terms of oversight for your efforts with Drew Wiemann?
Well, it seems to me that what has happened over the past 2 years, and I hope I'm answering questions, not if you can say Danny didn't answer that. The department has provided, from my perspective, a more rigorous review of our plans and of our budget, and it seems appropriate to me. I'll give you an example. We invest in our district significantly in working with the National Urban Alliance. And we believe in it, and we have some good data around the work. And yet, Bondo and others from the department keep saying, so let's talk about outcomes here. It's not about a feel-good program, which is a good thing, but it is about results. It is about outcomes. So I think in a partnership with us, keeping us focused on outcomes, making it clear about any kind of potential planning that might take place. You know, you shouldn't use money for that because you've got other money for that, or whatever the case may be. So I think working with us as a partner, and at the end of the day, approving our plans and being confident that we've got plans that are truly going to support our community.
And Dr. Jett, the talking about outcomes, and I know you've offered to come back to talk more about that, and I know we've got a long list of people to hear it. But and you know, at the last year we heard presentations about a broad array of outcomes, some implied, some directly explicitly stated in statute, but many of us are interested in a variety of outcomes, but many of us are interested in academic achievement, increases in academic achievement. Are those being tracked as a result of integration efforts in your district? Tell us a little bit about how you're talking about, you know, matching your efforts with increasing academic achievement for students who participate in.
A couple of examples come to mind, back to the National Urban Alliance. We just this past spring commissioned a study, an evaluation of what we're calling the MUA effect. In other words, we train teachers and students interact with teachers who've been trained. And so what's the effect in research sense? What are the outcomes? It's been challenging for us to do, and yet we stayed the course in doing it. It's challenging because you have to train enough teachers so that you've got a critical mass so that students are experiencing a consistent effect across the training. And we finally reached a penetration level with training that we were able to do that for baseline. And what we're trying to say is we're trying to determine, and it's our hope, but we want the numbers to tell us, does having teachers trained by NUA make a difference in the outcomes? And of course, to do that, we need to compare the students who are alike, but who have not been taught by NUA trained teachers. So it's a very complex matter to do, but our commitment to do that is very sincere and ongoing. We partnered with NUA to do that first study, and we had them contribute half the cost to do it. Preliminary findings are inconclusive, as you might imagine. A, it's early in the implementation, and B, early in the design of the research study, which we've got to refine some because we found some limitations to the study that were challenging to us. Secondly, in the Choice is Yours program, which does not use integration revenue, but we operate the program, or at least our member districts do. We've been studying academic achievement for several years, and we have 2 years worth of results, which are a little bit confounding nonetheless. As they say, they are what they are. The first year of data seems to suggest that when students who choose to attend suburban schools from Minneapolis who qualify for free and reduced lunches under the Suburban Choice Program tended to do statistically better academically. Year two of the study tended to reverse that finding. So we're eagerly waiting year three to continue the study. And I think I'll stop here. The point I'm trying to make is we do look at academic achievement as an outcome of what we're doing in appropriate places, and we stay after that.
And then the final question, this is kind of, you know, I've seen it go on the limb a little bit here, but and so deal with it as you wish, but if the legislature were to say we want to attach a very clear expectation of increasing academic achievement to integration revenues in our integration scheme, is that something that the community of WEMAP would accept, embrace, advocate for? I know there's probably a more complex answer to that, but I just want to, you know, there are a number of legislators who have been in, you know, loosely trying to get their, talking about academic achievement as a desired and prioritized outcome as they try to get their hands around what we do at integration, with our integration rule and our integration funds. So, you know, just some feedback in terms of, you know, how WEMAP would approach that kind of interest on the part of the legislature of singling out and prioritizing that particular outcome for all our integration efforts.
I guess my candid reaction is the devil's in the details.
Sure.
And our recent experience, or ongoing experience with No Child Left Behind, tells us that it's a great concept. Who wants to leave any child behind? No one does. So it's easy to sign on to say, sure. But when you get to the details, and what are the, what I believe are some of the unintended consequences that might accrue to that, then you might answer the question differently. In general, though, I think we would support any activity support that helps us be successful with educating all the children who are in our charge. I would only personally hope that that wouldn't be the only goal of the DC school. I think that could be one goal, but if you could come and participate in our Elder Wisdom Children's Song program that doesn't improve the test score but does wonders for the community, to learn about people from different races and backgrounds and ages, just as an example. If you could come to our training session in May, we have a two-day celebration of probably 700 teachers who spent an intense year working with the National Urban Alliance. You know, we're working to see if that makes a difference, but boy, it makes a difference in the professional life of those teachers. So I guess I would just encourage that, not to be so narrow, if that's one of the outcomes, then fine, let's go for it. But I think there's more to building community with a capital C than that. I think it would be a missed opportunity if we didn't broaden it, at least from my perspective.
I appreciate your candor. Thank you.
Dr. Judd, I just have a quick question here. As far as your outreach to integrational populations, what type of mechanism do you use, if any, that maybe we could look at here as a legislation goes through to help other districts possibly use the same, or maybe you could just describe what you're using.
I'm not sure I have your question, so let me start, and if I'm going somewhere you don't want me
well,
to...
Well, let me just repeat what I'm trying to say here. What type of outreach do you do to those communities of color to integrate your district, to have those students in your district come to your schools? How do you get the word out?
If you're referring specifically to our two magnet schools.
Right.
Quite frankly, our advertising has been fairly minimal, although we have been reasonably fully enrolled by word of mouth mostly. We have advertised in some of the government centers in Hennepin County. We have some brochures. I think you have some in your packet that are distributed. I have to be quite candid. It's a real challenge in the current environment of student enrollment, where some districts have declining enrollment, some districts don't. We're in an open enrollment environment, and it matters when kids come and go from school. It matters to school districts. And so we've tried to be gentle with our member districts and not aggressively advertising, because they truly are us. I mean, we are nothing without them. And as long as we stay reasonably still, we've been fairly modest with our advertising. However, we've noticed a decline in our enrollment over the past several years, and we just are tonight at the board meeting I'm going to receiving part two of a magnet school study, part of which focuses on the next step of marketing those opportunities to students so that schools can stay at or near full capacity within the context of our mission. So early in our career, these schools opened in 99 and 2000, so they are 7-8 years old. It took time to grow enrollment. They grew almost full, and now we've seen some drop-off, and now we've had a study to go back and develop a marketing plan that will fill them back up.
Thank you. Well, thank you for your presentation, and I'm sure we'll be talking again, and
thank you very much.
Welcome you to the session here. The next presenter will be Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools. And I'll certainly try to be fair on the time. I know we went over a little bit there, so.
Members of the committee, I'm Mary Gilbert, the legislative liaison for the St. Paul Public Schools, and I also brought our placement center director, Phil Casey, who's going to answer actually in anticipation of your questions, Representative Romaine. Dominguez, about parental involvement and how we work our choice program. St. Paul Public Schools actually was involved initially with the first integration revenue back in, was it 1987, I believe? 87 or 89, the years of dating. And it was a result of, we had been a recipient of a federal school magnet grant, and that was expiring, and and we implemented the federal magnet program as a result of being cited by the Department of Education under the old rule, which said that you had that protected class within a building couldn't exceed 15% of the general enrollment within the district. And at the time, St. Paul had both a ceiling and a floor, so we were very, very committed to integrating at that time. In addition to that, Dr. Bennett started the whole suburban initiative in the East Metro side, where he invited several superintendents from the suburban area and their very brave boards to begin some discussions around some joint city-suburban initiatives around some in the schools. And in fact, the Chair Growling was on the Roseville School Board and provided a lot of leadership for the Roseville School District at the time. So she was one of the Roseville School Board members that helped kind of birth the concept of the East Metro Magnet School. The three goals of our plan are to provide parents a choice through a world of opportunities, and Bill's going to talk to you a little bit about that in a minute, world-class rigorous education for all students. In St. Paul, we have a site-based program in place where each school has a site council that has parents and teachers and staff on it, and they work together to do a school improvement plan, define the school goals, shape the school policy and procedures, and are basically responsible for the program that they have at the school. Our integration revenue is spent according to the Minnesota Department of Education guidelines. We work with the department on those guidelines, and we send those out to our buildings. As you know, we have a significant ELL population in St. Paul, and as it comes to outcomes, our ELL outcomes are outperforming, in many cases, the state and the nation. We're also working as part of that plan to reduce some of the racial disparities we have with special ed, and increase the number of students of color who are taking college preparatory curriculum and IB and AP courses at the high school. In addition to that, we've really focused on some of the pre-kindergarten initiatives, again, related about starting early and making sure that we deal with some of the academic outcomes related to the populations that we serve. And finally, to create and expand an inclusive learning environment in St. Paul. And that takes, and that basically is that every student, regardless of race or income, should be prepared for college in the world of work. I mean, that's the ultimate goal that we have in St. Paul. And we do use targeted instructional staff development and co-curricular and extracurricular activities because, as many of you saw by Dr. Russell's presentation, we are at the point where we are beginning to resegregate some of our city schools. How we spend our integration revenue. We are anticipating we're going to get about $20.4 million of integration revenue. And again, going back to when the legislature first set the amount, part of it was that we just documented all the expenditures we had around our magnet school. And it was, we didn't get all that we asked for. And in fact, a lot of it was levy. And over time, there's been some changes in the formula because as the tax committee has made some changes with commercial and industrial tax relief, they've had to change the integration formula for the cities of the first class to offset some of that. So if you think there's any kind of rhyme or reason related to actual integration revenue over time, it really has got a lot of things that have contributed to how much we get. But I will point out, though, that we spend $14.7 million to our maintenance schools, $1.84 million to our neighborhood schools, and we spend $12.6 million on transportation. And if you can add really, really fast and well, you'll know that that is $8.6 million more that we spend on integration activities than we receive from the state. So we do heavily subsidize our choice program in St. Paul. And as I said, a majority of, we also have a very robust, as I mentioned earlier, partnership with the EMED district where we have over, we run a multicultural research center, which is available to all of the member districts, and we have classroom partnership programs. We've had over 2,800 staff participate in those and over 13,000 students. So, again, in addition to operating the Great Magnets, which I know that they're going to talk about themselves, as I said, we spend a majority of our revenue supporting our Magnet School Choice Program, multicultural staff training, additional, not supplanting, additional English language learner teachers and bilingual professionals, because with our community, we have to communicate them about all this choice and make sure that we have good communication with them. and other parent outreach activities. The neighborhood schools are also critical to our integration plan because the whole point of having a voluntary choice program is that if you want to stay in your neighborhood school, you should be able to stay there, and it should be as academically rigorous program as they have within the magnet school. And so we do an allocation to our neighborhood schools as well, and they add teacher specialists, all day K, multicultural books and materials. We are not buying our general history, you know, application with that, but it is based on achieving our education goals within those buildings. Jill, I think I'll just let her talk a little bit now about how we go through the choice process and how we do our parent outreach.
Okay, thank you. Our choice process is based on three main objectives. One is that students should attend schools that they have chosen, and it's a voluntary process for the families. Second, that children from the same family should be able to stay together in the same school. And finally, that preference for a school is usually given to the school that's in their neighborhood first and then goes from there. Because we have a system of neighborhood schools and magnet schools in St. Paul, we also have a somewhat complex system of school choice. And having a world of opportunities for our students doesn't do any good unless we can figure out how to get the word out to parents and help them make informed choices. And to that point, a big piece of the work of my department, which is the Student Placement Center, and is in cooperation with our Office of Community Relations, is to work with parents to help them understand what options are available. In the handouts that you received, we have a few examples of them. One is our school choice guide, which you see, this is the last year one. The one for 2008-2009 just went to press today, and so I can't give you an example of that. This is delivered to all the households in St. Paul, as well as to a lot of our agencies that we are partners with. It is translated into four languages, English, Hmong, Somali, and Spanish, and that is made available to parents. We also have, and you have kind of a one-page picture of our school choice website, which is also in four languages, that offers parents an interactive feature so they can go and take a look at what school options are available to them. We also have a number of mailings that go out. We have a Get Ready for School flyer that we work with in cooperation with agencies that serve our families, so that we do a mailing to the parents of 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds so that they know what time it is to get ready for school. We work with our student wellness department so that the children can get early childhood screening, which can be done as early as age 3. And then that can be a gateway for them into services that they might need to ensure their readiness for school. We also have our parents' information fair, which this year will be on February 2nd. It's a Saturday. We have all of the public schools in St. Paul, as well as charter schools, private schools, and some programs that will support families at the fair. And parents can go around. It's a one-stop shop, so that they can go around and gather a lot of information. Our student placement services are really prominently featured at that event, because then we can take care of questions that parents might have around that. In addition to that, that's also kind of the gateway to school events such as open houses and showcases where parents can come and visit. Schools give a lot of tours to parents as well. In addition to that, we do outreach, and that's a big part of the Student Placement Center staff. We're a multilingual, multi-ethnic staff that we think reflects our St. Paul community of parents and students. And so we go out and we do what we call gigs or outreach to about anybody that will have us. And during the months of January, February, and March, which are the prime school choice months, we do about 100 outreach events. We will speak to parent groups large and small and have a presence in the community there. We also, though, view outreach as a year-round activity. The Student Placement Center is open year-round, and we attend community fairs and other events so that we're present where parents are. We also provide outreach services or intake services for families who are new. So throughout the year when they're coming in, they'll come to our center first, and then we will sit down, we will take a look at what the grades are, what the needs are of their students, if they are ELL or if they have need particular special ed services, take a look at their address, see where they live, and offer them all available choices based on their address and what the parent needs are. So they get a lot of one-to-one service, both during the school choice period, but also for families coming in. We recognize that St. Paul is an urban district, which means families are mobile, which means families have second languages, which means families come from a wide range of income, and we try to keep that in mind when we design our services.
Thank you for that, all that information. Could you please say your name for our record?
My name is Jill Casey from the Student Placement Center, St. Paul Public School.
Thank you. I heard your presentation, but I haven't heard is any concerns and some issues we can use as far as legislation. Could you please address that? And if you would say your name again, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools. As Dr. Jeff said, I think the department has responded to the legislative auditor's report. And I think the communication going between the district and the Department of Education is very good. We feel that there should remain some flexibility within the integration uses. We think it's important that if the legislature believes that we have that site base is important, we have to allow enough flexibility for the local sites within certain parameters, you know what I mean, to design a program that's effective for them. The other thing is we don't want to be caught kind of blowing in the political wind. You know, if one governor and one commissioner says, well, the only integration activity that they think is effective is the choices of ours, and that's the only time they're going to approve. You know what I mean? We want to make sure that there's good parameters about what integration revenue should be spent on, and I think it should be very flexible to deal with both integration activities that deal with breaking down some of the racial barriers that exist and the racial stereotyping that goes on within communities. And I wish I could say we didn't need to still do that, but I think we do. And that, just so for a district of our size that has a $28 million budget, kind of a line-by-line approval doesn't make much sense to us. It seems like the accountants would be really busy and it wouldn't be focused on, you know, what the programs would be. And I think an audit function would be more appropriate for that. And it would be more cost-effective, I think, for the department as well as the district. Related to, again, I think that the goals of the integration plan should be both integration as well as academic outcomes. And so, again, I'm speaking to that flexibility, and I don't think we want to lose sight of it. I mean, someone might suggest that, well, you spent $12 million on transportation. How is that improving academic outcomes? You know, the choice program is really critical to our district. Our parents need that. If they're highly mobile parents, they can make it to school regardless of where they move within their district. That's a benefit to that. Our kids are not living in the same attendance boundaries that they were 25, 35, 45 years ago when our schools were built. If we had to readjust attendance boundaries on a yearly basis, you know, depending on where the enrollment and populations were within, it would be hugely disruptive to parents and families in the school. So again, you know, as Dr. Jeff said, there is some kind of devil in the detail, and I think making the applications of the revenue in a broader context to address both issues, both academic outcomes and a multicultural learning environment would be really critical for moving forward with the rule. As far as the recommendation dealing with the protected, having the revenue go out based on the number percent of protected classes, well, if that was the only indicator used for integration revenue, then everybody would want to resegregate their school because then they would get more money, you know, because they would have, so it kind of is counterintuitive to the whole notion, you know, of integration. And as an early partner in the East Metro area with some of our suburban boards, their communities weren't really enthusiastic about some of the early work that we did, and they were very brave, so to join partnerships with us, even the non-contiguous districts that have a low percent of minority kids. And some of those districts actually have been some of the most active, you know, and kind of
work their community and work their board. And so I think it would be kind of unfair after years of working with them and establishing relationships and having these partnerships with the students. Because I have to tell you, the first time we took a group of students up to Stillwater, from Stillwater and Paul up for a week of camp, there were a lot of parents who had a lot of concerns about it. And that just, you know, we don't run into that same kind of problem these days. You know, and that's just been years and years of work. So I think we would disagree with the recommendation that the formula allocation would be great for us. We'd probably get more money, you know, but I think that we need to be kind of true to what the intent of the integration is in the first place, which is to deal with both academic outcomes and some kind of racial balance or some kind of goal toward trying to have some kind of integration. One of the things that the legislative auditor didn't talk about was the rules that currently reflect you're either white or non-white. And in St. Paul, we have a pretty, in fact, probably one of the most integrated districts in the country between our white, Hispanic, African, and African-American, and, and the rule only recognizes white or non-white. And so that's part of the reason that the district got the waiver last year so that we could look at some other kinds of diversities within the school. And so I think that would be good to recognize that if you took a look at that. And that doesn't really relate to the integration use money, but it may look at, you know, how the department actually would deal with some of the racial isolation within the individual school. So it might have an impact on that. I think that's about it, and I'm sure I've passed my time.
Thank you for your presentation. I believe Carlos, Representative Mariani, has a question.
This is a little bit off subject, but related. You know, mid through last year, the U.S. Supreme Court made its decision on voluntary integration efforts. Because here we're talking about one school district, St. Paul. So it's a whole district. Have you guys looked at? Have you done an interpretation of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision on whether or not it speaks to any of your choice, the processes by which you offer choice to your students?
Excuse me. We looked at it briefly. We haven't used ethnicity or race as a determiner for probably about 8 years now, 8 or 9 years now. So we do it just based on attendance area and presence of siblings in the school. And so in some regards, that doesn't directly impact the work that we've done. We're just continuing as we have.
And it sounds like it falls, quote unquote, safely within the interpretation.
I think so.
At least I'm not a lawyer, but as I understand the decision.
We've discussed it briefly with our district legal counsel,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't concerned.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. There's no other questions. Thank you for your presentation. Again, we are taking everything that you have given to us into consideration. So, again, thank you for being here today. Next on the list is Charlie Lazzie, Director of West Central Integration Collaborative. I happen to know Charlie, and welcome. She's from Wilmer, Minnesota.
Mr.
Yes.
I'm wondering if perhaps we could have this part of the hearing in Spanish, since the three of us are rather fluent in Spanish.
It's integration, isn't it? No. That's a good idea, Representative, but I'm sure the other folks in the room, they're on Spanish 1, so we'll go with the English language today. Welcome to the committee, and if you would please say your name and for our...
And I am the director of the West Central Integration Collaborative, and we are a consortium of 7 school districts out in West Central Minnesota. So we're about 2.5 hours away from here, west of here, and so I will concentrate on that. I did send our, did you get it in Spanish? No? Okay. Did you get, I would like at least Willie for you to have one copy and anybody else that wishes one. And that would be our response.
Thank you.
The responses are from a collaborative, immigration collaborative, not just in Western Minnesota, but also the southern part. It's hopefully the Iowa things and those folks. Okay. I feel like a baby compared to all the other ones that have spoken. We're pretty simple. Again, we are 7 school districts. We have a total of about $1.2 million between all of those 7 districts. And basically, our goals really fall into some academic areas. We do want, our goal one is school success for all students. We help students stay in school by providing tutoring services. And also we hire what we call school success coordinators. And it's those folks, especially in the Wilmer School District, that make things happen. And I heard you guys talk about outcomes, and believe me, we have seen a good outcome, and that one was that we had a higher graduation rate among minority students. And we were able to showcase that also in Atlanta in 2006 when we became an All-American City. And to become an All-American City, you have to go over there and you have to talk about your problems as a town and then how you have overcome some of those. That doesn't mean that you're free of problems or issues, but at least that is a wonderful recognition. And so for us, that's one of the biggest areas, that we really want our kids to go to college, and that includes minority kids, providing tutoring services. This has been amazing. The integration revenue, without it, we would not be able to transport kids home. I mean, can you imagine having to do that out in rural Minnesota? And maybe it's the same thing here. I think it's different. We also provide cultural competence activities, so such as we provide kids that don't fit going to basketball or going into some of those other activities with different activities such as folklore dancing, having the soccer, salsa dancing, even our FIED classes offer that, or they'll call for our staff to come in and do an hour or two of some salsa dancing. And then we also have something that's called Youth Community Circle for kids get together from all the seven school districts, and they get together to talk about, you know, what's it like to grow up being Latino here in Willow, Minnesota, or being East African. And those are going wonderful. They meet once a month, or maybe more than that sometimes. And then they also do a community service kind of project. And then our second goal was that we wanted to partner with our local community, Ed and Rack, and some other entities that were already established in the community, so that we would not be duplicating services. And not just that, because our dollars are quite limited. We don't have $20 million to do many things. So we partner with some of those folks to have a multicultural resource center for us, or the public library to have books and materials, things like that, cooking classes. We don't have our own brochure. We are working on that. But we do use our local community ed brochure. We do also provide language-appropriate services, either in writing or spoken. And then I guess what I would say our strongest programs are also on our goal area number 3, which is communication. And we have a strong language program in the elementary school, and it happens to be Spanish. It has taken off quite well. K-6. And we also, let me back up on that program, because it's not just about teaching the kids about language, but it's also teaching the kids about tolerance. And so our teachers are wonderful because they not only speak Spanish, they are highly trained on the area of cultural competence. And if a kid comes in and has an issue or has a question about whatever's going on in the community or doesn't understand what it's like to be Mexican, or is that a bad thing or is that a good thing, the teacher will stop and then everybody will have a discussion on that. So those are good programs to have. We also have a newcomers program. And that program is specifically for students that have been in the United States for less than a year. And it's for students that have attended a school in the United States for less than a year. that program again is quite successful, and we need more help. We are starting to see quite an increase in our East African population. Our Latino population is at about 20%. I couldn't tell you the East African population just because it has been growing these past 2 years. And then the fourth one was that we wanted to create cultural awareness in the whole community, not just inside the school. We have many partnerships, like I said, but we have many more. And the reason for that, again, is to stretch our dollars. We also have community cultural liaisons. And these folks are the ones that do the outreach, help parents, communicate with school staff, or communicate with, believe it or not, employers. We do call parents, these cultural liaisons, and the school success coordinators make sure that we are college parents to show up for school conferences. And we have about 100% attendance during conference time in some of our school buildings. We also partner with the Native American community, which we are, I don't know, we have maybe 15 families of that. And then the East African Coalition, that has started up, and we partner with them to offer adult literacy and tutoring services, although we also do that in the schools. So because of this integration collaborative and because of the integration revenue, we have been able to leverage federal dollars for our new Mandarin Chinese language program at the high school. And also we have dollars to do some healthy youth development for kids, minority kids, through MBAs. And then we also have local government dollars. And the city of Wilma has been wonderful in this regard because they give us the money for us to help them out. And we provide the city and the county with cultural competency training. Let me tell you some other things. Now, the difference between us and the folks here in the metro is that integration collaborative is different than an integration district. And if you have questions about that, ask Wando. So we cover a greater geographically area. And and so we have many different administrative systems, as well as different calendars and schedules. And that becomes a little tricky from time to time. And then the other thing that's different in Minnesota is that it's a new thing, this whole phenomenon. Maybe not so much for Wilmer. I grew up in Wilmer, by the way, and that's where I got my name, Charlie. I was there since 1970, and there was not much ethnic variation back then, except for European countries, the Germans and the Swedish and the Norwegians were there. So I've seen a lot of changes, and I've seen a lot of positive changes, and let me tell you, without this, it would be horrible. We need this. It needs to continue. And then I can also tell you what we need to do to support us on. We need the support of, we certainly agree with the recommendations in the auditor's report, but we would like the funding formula to be directly linked, or to directly link integration funding to the district's integration responsibility. I don't know if you are aware, Minneapolis or the Metro District get $445 per pupil in integration aid, and we get $129. And I'm sure some folks will say, well, we're bigger and we have more needs. Well, we do too. We may be smaller, but we are really spread out. We support equal oversight of the budgets and the planning process. And we also believe that the program controls should really remain at the local level with community decisions. I really believe that that's a must. If that can continue, that would be great. The other thing that we do need is there's a big need out in rural Minnesota, central Minnesota, for a lot of intercultural company training because so many of our adjoining districts are homogeneous. They have been that way for a long time, and so when they start seeing some of these changes, it's a little bit scary. And then please continue the funding for transportation. Without that, there is no way we could carry some of our programming. Impossible. And when evaluating the transportation program, I'm glad there is an evaluation component to this, is that we look at all the positive outcomes, and then we also interview parents and families, not just data. I mean, data is data. And it's okay to have it, but, you know, can we really document the changes of a whole community? And that's where we're at. And that's what we're seeing. The other thing that we do quite well, and we do as much as we can, is we do partner with the school district to provide professional development. I know somebody else mentioned that. They work with the teachers, provide training, how to best work with minority students. We keep doing that. I wish we could do more, but it's difficult. And then, that's it on my end. Do you have any questions for me?
Yes, we do. You've written out your recommendations, and I had in your third bullet here on your recommendation, could you explain a little bit more about the, you believe that the program control should remain in the local level with community-based decisions? How do you see that?
Right. We believe that, yes, we can follow the guidelines or the criteria that is set forth. That's fine. But that we also, when we start an integration collaborative in the rural communities, the community has to come on board, and that's a good thing. We want that to continue. We don't want that just to be a state decision. Say, here's a mandate, you must do it exactly like we say you should do it, which we are. But what I'm saying is provide some flexibility in this.
And the oversight, could you give me some more perspective as far as your oversight concerns?
I think that we did this a while back, but I can honestly tell you that the oversight has it's much better. I have constant communication with Wando, a one-man show, over at MCE, and he's wonderful. If we have questions or we're trying to do something different, or really not, because the dollars are quite limited. But anyway, we always call him. Actually, Wando is coming out, paying a visit to our rural district, and he's also going to be attending a huge celebration of cultures, which is very important for us to have, and that's where all of us students are showcased in that celebration of cultures. It's a one-day event, and we draw over 2,000 people from our surrounding community.
I have no further questions.
No, Ms. Blakely, how old is the collaborative? How long?
Five years.
5 years? Okay.
Well, thank you. There's no other questions of us. We appreciate you coming from Wilmer, and have a safe drive home. Please do. Thank you. Next is Dr. Carl Wallstrom, the superintendent of East Metro Integration District. Oh, excuse me. I'm going a little bit quickly here. Mark Jacobson, he's from Northwest Suburban Integration School. Am I correct? Kind of. Is that I'm going to talk to Jacobson? I believe you're substituting for Maria Moore. Marsha? Well, thank you. I'm sorry I messed up your name. You'll have the opportunity now to give us your name in full, and we appreciate you coming here.
Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Mark Robertson, and I am superintendent of Fridley Schools. And I am here not to represent Fridley Schools, but Marsha. I received a panic phone call about noon today. Marsha's ill, so she asked me to come and represent the Integration School District. I think because in the life of a superintendent, we have seven superintendents that are collaborative, and I've only done this for 4.5 years, and I'm the second most veteran one, so I'm the only one with any history that's left in the integration district. And then I was chair of that board for a year and a half here just recently. So you have three different documents that's in front of you that Marcia sent with me. And let me just briefly talk about the Northwest Suburban Integration School District. If you flip to the second page of this yellow-colored document, where it's stapled there, you'll see the seven school districts. And I often say this is a strange collaborative in the sense that you have very large districts, and Okehennep and the largest in the state, and you have school districts like Rockford, Fridley, and Buffalo, actually, and then Brooklyn Center that are very tiny. And then Osseo is large also, and Elk River is sort of in between. And the way the rule is set up, as you know, if you touch a district that's racialized, maybe you're part of that collaborative. I would just like to kind of try to summarize this briefly into three. It's kind of a three-pronged stool here of how the Northwest Suburban Integration School District functions. One prong is that the Northwest Suburban District has its own programs to support all of the seven school districts, and I'll talk about and touch about those briefly. The second piece is that individual school districts keep a portion of that, those dollars to have integration activities within their school district. And then the third prong is that's been, I think, very successful in the seven districts is we've tried to use magnet schools to draw students across district boundaries to reduce racial isolation. We really have three goals in my mind. One is to improve academic achievement for all students. All kids deserve that. One is to increase racial interaction. There's some activities where there's periodic interaction between various student groups, students of color, and parents and white students. And then the third one is just to reduce the percentage of racial isolation in some schools, and the reverse of that, to increase the number of students of color coming to students that are or schools that are predominantly white. And so, and I'm just going to be a bit random here because I know you're going to ask me about the audit at the end. So let me just say this is the fourth, and a number of people are going to talk with you today. You have four different distinct communities now that have come up to the microphone, and while the goal, the mission, the philosophy is the same behind what we want to accomplish, you have very unique communities. Wilmer is not Fridley. Fridley is not Buffalo, which is in our collaborative, and Fridley is not St. Paul or Minneapolis. And I think that one of my comments that where you go with legislation, we allow people to work around that goal with those outcomes, and I agree it needs to be academically focused as well as the integration piece, but the way you get there can be very different, and we're seeing that within our own collaborative that it's playing out differently in different communities. And let me just speak about that briefly. Anoka, Hennepin, and Osseo are huge districts. They have racially isolated schools within their district, and they have predominantly white schools within their district. And they have issues with multiple high schools, and some are very isolated one way or the other. When you come to a Fridley, you have one show in town, one school in Brooklyn Center, one high school. And so the way you deal with that issue is going to be very different because we don't have district boundaries. We have one district that feeds into one place. And so I would encourage you as you move down the line with legislation that might be tweaked or changed that allow flexibility that if the plan makes sense to accomplish the goals, to let people work out a sensible plan. Okay. Very briefly, the integration district provides almost to birth to death kinds of services to try to increase racial interaction. And if you go back to the first page of this document, you'll see that they have the third page with the map on it here. They have programs for children. They have programs for parents who are going to have children in school to get them familiar with the American school system or with the school systems that we have here. And then you have programs that are provided to enhance school programs sort of in a co-curricular sense.
and I'm not going to go through all those, but they're listed in the categories of cultural. They have a cultural education center, release space in Brooklyn Center that people come to. There's a multicultural resource center there. There's a dance floor. There's art things to do and so on that are related cross-culturally. There are youth development pieces that come out to the school, and then there's a professional development network that we have. We've tried to do things purposefully long-term. We provide scholarships for employees in our school district, particularly for people of color that want to move from perhaps a para position to a teaching position to allow them to go back to school. We do the same thing to encourage that for young people that are going on to college, to try to increase the diversity of our staff and also long-term try to impact the number of professionals of color that are coming into education and so on. So they have a set of programs that they function with at the integration district. If you take the second brochure, this talks about the magnet schools. And what may be a bit different from the way we fund ourselves, here's kind of how it works in the integration district that we live. We get our funding and we give either 40, 50, or a different percentage of those dollars directly over the integration district to do their program. We keep a chunk for our own in-trust district programs that we're doing also, but then we've been very aggressive to go after federal funding. And so we've, we're on our second set of federal grants. The first set was about $11 million, and the second set was about another $10 million to put in magnet schools. And the idea is to draw students of color and white students across district boundaries to decrease racial isolation. And if you look and open up this brochure, you'll see that the top strand is visual performing arts. The second one relates to the STEM initiatives, and the third is an IB focus. And so we have strategically placed schools and created magnet schools where a school that is predominantly white will feed a school that is predominantly racially isolated and vice versa and so on. And so we are starting to see some good movement across district boundaries through the magnet program. The other appealing thing that we think about our magnet programs is these are all high rigor programs, and we're seeing some significant growth in academic achievement that those students that attend those schools. The last document that you have is a Carla Fawbridge put this together related to our magnet school programs. And think of this as a two-way street. You want to take a school in Buffalo that is 99% white students and draw students of color to that school. And you want to take a school that might be Brooklyn Center, Earl Brown, and they've established an IB program. They want to become less racially isolated, and they want to draw white students in there. And so these are some charts that talk about the racially isolated schools and what impact the programs have had to reduce racial isolation. And if you flip to the third page, the ones that are not racially isolated, those magnet schools, how that has increased in diversity over the last two or three years. And it's, the first sheet basically says that for those schools that are racially isolated, we're moving kids in the right direction in six of those seven schools. And for those schools that are the predominantly white schools, they are increasing their diversity in seven out of eight of those schools. And so that's been our philosophy of how we're trying to get this job done. Last couple comments related to the audit. And again, I'm pinch hitting here today. So I've read it, but it's been a while since I reviewed that. But my comment again was I have no problem with accountability. I think there should be an academic component to that, but I would say this, I would caution the legislature in this sense that if you are going to put those kinds of academic standards on there that you need to do this, you need to have patience. If you're using a magnet school to develop racial interaction or increase or decrease racial isolation, and I can speak for Frithy, we just finished three hard years of work to implement the International Baccalaureate Middle School program. And you're not going to see results in 1 year. You're not going to see results perhaps in 2 years. You might see results in 3 years and beyond, and we are starting to see those things now. But they have implementation dips when you change paradigms. And so that's happened a little bit, but we're starting to see some great progress. I guess I'll stop and let you ask questions, and I'll do my best to answer if you have any.
Sure, Mr.
Representative Charles Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for a very good presentation as a pinch hitter, and I know Marcia, I know she'd be proud of your work. I was struck by the strategy of being intentional about physically placing schools near other schools so that you could encourage some movement. And again, this isn't on point with the legislative auditor, but it goes to another question I had asked earlier about the U.S. Supreme Court decision, because I was thinking to ask you the same thing about, well, if you're using magnets as a cross district, you want to encourage movement of students of color, but it seems like the way that you're getting at that is to this use of geographic location, which is, again, I'm not a lawyer, but as I read the translations of the Supreme Court decision, that seems to be very, very much within bounds.
Marcia checked that out. We've worked that through went through the whole case last spring. In fact, our new grant money was, we were waiting for that to find out, are we doing it okay? And we received blessing from that this is an okay way to do it. Now, is it masking something? If you look at our seven districts, it's like the rays of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Your racial isolation is kind of down in this corner.
Right.
But we've tried to base it based upon geography, and that seems to have worked, and it seems to fit the criteria that they're talking about at the federal level.
I'm just curious, just because you showed us the chart here, but in this first one of the schools that are racially isolated, the one blip is Brooklyn Center High School in terms of magnet students. Is that just because of the concentration, perhaps, of students of color within that particular school district maybe being higher than...
Say one more time.
Well, as I look at this chart, the first one, Brooklyn Center High School, you've got magnet students at a higher racial isolation than non-magnet students, and that's the opposite of every other school here. So I mean,
the six out of seven there that you're looking at in the first page, you're looking at the second bar graph, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mostly because it's brand new. Okay, it's in the second tier of and it's just being implemented right now. Okay, so the data is fresh, the data is new, but it hasn't been.
Okay.
If you look at Earl Brown, Birch Grove, Edgewood, Northview, those schools have been, they started those magnets, the implementation of those 2.5 years ago, and they were just getting rolling on that. I anticipate, we're hoping that if you look at this a year or two down the line, when they get their new magnet, they're just getting into it, okay? And so you're not seeing the results of it yet. That's why I believe that exists that way.
Any other questions, Representative Mariani?
No.
None questions. Again, I as I asked the others that were presenting, in your presentation, you didn't mention the outreach of students.
Okay.
How are you doing that as far as outreach? And you also mentioned in Buffalo, as the chart that we have here, the percentage of non kids of color. What work are you doing to try to improve that?
Okay. We should have an epiphany about a year ago, because with the superintendents meet every other month, and then I suggest that we go meet at a site where there's a magnet school. At least we all had to drive out to Buffalo High School, and that's a long way for someone to get on a bus and travel if your concentration of students of color is in this area and stuff. And so we're kind of thinking about what is our strategy, but let me answer the question about marketing and so on. We have done multiple forms of marketing, but one of the ones that seems to be working the best is that we have set up Choice Fair at shopping malls, Northtown, Brookdale, and places like that. We do mailings. We do all sorts of things within the schools where we're passing out information in backpacks and sending them home. Fridley last night had a Choice Fair open house. We're doing that at each of the sites. And parents are at specific dates are able to come as they're looking to choose schools and so on. So we're doing I think we're doing quite a bit in that area. And here's kind of the truth of that. When you start a new program, you need to do as much of that as you can. But as we're getting into our third year of the Magnet in Fridley, we're finding that most of our new students are coming because of word of mouth, because a neighbor is coming from another area into our school district, and they're going, we like that. And I'm sure the same is happening for other schools also. So.
Okay. The reason why I'm asking that question, because in the report, some of the items that was suggested and some of the items that they've seen was districts getting revenue for integration, and some of those areas were still segregated.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings on a problem. If they're getting revenue to do desegregation, we got to change that. And so I'm wondering how about the district itself, the change that they want to bring.
Well, the seven superintendents in our collaborative are committed to try to decrease racial isolation. And if you look at the data, it's working in most places. I'll just tell you that the time factor is a critical thing, too. Sometimes it takes more than 2 or 3 years, in my opinion, to change perceptions of what's going on in a school. And in some of the schools that have had less movement have been more on the perception end rather than the reality end of things and stuff. And so people have been, we've been on the positive end of some of that stuff. And clearly, our middle school received the Magnet Award. Well, people pick that up in the press and go, oh, that must be a good place to go and stuff. But if you don't get on the front end of some of that stuff, sometimes it's hard to turn the corner. I think progress is being made, though, and so I agree with the accountability piece. It does need to happen. Here's the other issue that's happening. Our neighbors and friends, Osseo, have a unique problem within their district. We can move as many kids as we want to between Osseo and Fridley and Osseo and Brooklyn Center and Osseo and Okehannepin within their district. They have a community that sometimes is hesitant to move kids across the district boundaries that exist within. And so that's what I talked about earlier, about if you have four high schools, and I'll just say Maple Grove versus Park Center, that is something where it might take some other kinds of leverage to say, we're going to move some kids across
okay. lines. I hate to cut you off, but we're on time span here. And thank you for your presentation, and we welcome your comments and concerns. And thanks again for coming. Next on the schedule is Dr. Wallstrom. He's the superintendent from East Metro Integration District.
Chair Dominguez and members of the committee.
Welcome.
Thank you for this opportunity to visit with you today. I'm a superintendent of the East Metro Integration District. That's a joint powers school district representing 10 districts, including St. Paul, and 9 suburban districts that adjoin or are in close proximity to the St. Paul schools. I have with me today Kathy Griebel, who's our Director of Education Services. She's going to assist in presenting with some information about EMID and EMID schools and programs.
Excuse me, before we go on, could
yes,
you say your name for the record?
I'm sorry, my name is Carl Wallstrom.
Welcome.
Superintendent, East
Thank
Metro Integration District.
You can continue.
Thank you. I'm going to change the order of the presentation a little bit, and I'm going to start with the Legislative Auditor's Report and then tell you a little bit about our schools rather than the other way around. I will intentionally try not to be redundant since you're hearing perhaps many of the same comments repeated to you. Let me just say at the start that we provided the committee with a couple of handouts. One of them was a listing of our responses to the OLA report. It's a buff color document we provided to you earlier. So we've the collaborative identified the recommendations and provided a rational and a response to each of them. We also provided you with a brochure about EMID programs and schools and services, and Ms. Griebel will review that with you following my remarks.
Thank you.
Let me just say at the start that I will not lead you through each of the OLA recommendations. I'd just like to highlight two or three areas that I think would be of relevance from EMID's schools. First of all, we would welcome re-examination of the purpose of the rule. We believe it would provide greater direction and focus for our efforts, and we welcome the opportunity to participate with the department and the legislature in clarifying the purpose. We believe that academic achievement can be part of the purpose of the rule, that improving cultural understanding and improving interracial student contact, those activities are not mutually exclusive from improved student achievement. And we'd be supportive of having those purposes clarified. We believe integration revenue can be used to supplement, not supplant, but supplement academic achievement efforts in our schools. And we believe the rule ought to have both of those components in place, and we welcome the opportunity to participate in those discussions. Many of the recommendations from the report address the role of the State Department, and we just like to comment that we believe the department has improved in its efforts to be of support and guidance to the member districts. We particularly appreciate their consistent interpretation of the criteria for approval of budgets and programs and our integration plan. And so we believe we've seen a lot of success being made in that area. We do welcome from the department additional assistance with best practice around integration activities. That was one of the recommendations, that the department might serve as a repository or a clearinghouse for information that could be disseminated to districts throughout the state around integration work. We welcome that. We would also welcome evaluation design models that the department might be able to provide for our members to assist in the evaluation efforts. Like Superintendent Robertson indicated, we welcome the accountability part of this effort, but these are not easy matters, and each of us should not have to discover it on our own. We believe there ought to be best practice out there that we could emulate or benefit from. And we'd look to the department to help us with that effort. The final part of the recommendation that I would like to comment on relates to the revenue and the distribution of the revenue. We believe that any change in the revenue distribution away from the current status, that is, providing the resources based upon pupil units within a district, if we were to move that simply to protected class students, we believe in our collaborator that would set our efforts back considerably. That drop in our resources would in fact discourage our member districts from continuing to work in this area. As a voluntary collaborative, we believe districts need a financial incentive as well as a moral incentive to work around efforts related to increasing interracial student contact. And to pull back that funding mechanism seems to me to be a more of a segregating activity rather than an integrating activity. So we would support keeping the current distribution mechanism in the integration revenues statute the same as it is at the moment. One of the pieces of the recommendations dealt with the department ruling on new voluntary districts or additional voluntary districts into collaboratives. And our districts would not be opposed to that examination, but we would request a grand person clause to allow current voluntary districts to remain, and that as new districts were added to collaboratives such as EMID, that the department could provide guidance and support and, in fact, some assistance to determining whether the voluntary status is appropriate under the rule. So we welcome that discussion, but to take our current districts who are in a voluntary status under the rule and somehow eliminate them now from consideration for revenue as well as participation doesn't seem to me to be very positive with regard to future integration efforts in our community. Those are the comments that I would have about the OLA report. Again, Our position has been identified for you in writing. We commend it to your reading, and we'd be happy to respond today or at some point in the future as you continue to work on that path. This time I'd like Mrs. Grebel to give us a little bit of an overview of EMID programs and services, and then we'd be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you.
Would you please...
Committee, I'm Kathy Grebel, Director of Education Services for the East Metro Integration District, and I'm going to give you a look at what the integration revenue actually looks like in a multi-district collaborative. It's really easy to kind of get lost in all of the reports and recommendations and forget that it's kids we're talking about. And so we're going to show you a little bit about what this looks like at EMID. This slide shows the EMID member districts. As Carl mentioned, St. Paul and 9 suburban districts form the EMID collaboratives, and on this slide you'll see all those districts represented. We have established as a collaborative, of course, a vision and a mission, and we do believe that it's the nexus of cultural understanding and academic achievement that really makes the integration district powerful. We do operate 2 magnet schools, similar to some of the other magnet schools that you were hearing about earlier. One of our schools is an elementary school located in Woodbury, the year-round magnet school. About 400 students, 50% of those students come from St. Paul, and 50% come from our surrounding suburban district. So it is truly an integrated school, and it really reflects the diversity of those 10 districts. Half of our students at the magnet schools are kids of color, and half of them are majority students. So those kids are living integration every day. And parents are pleased with the experiences that they're having. They are choosing to attend these 2 schools, and they really appreciate the diversity and the interaction that they have at the 2 schools. Our other school is Crosswinds. It's a 6-10 program located in Woodbury. About 550 students at Crosswinds. Also, about 50% of those students come from St. Paul, and the other students come from our other 9 suburban districts. Both of our magnet schools operate on a year-round calendar and have different magnet foci. Crosswinds is an international baccalaureate school. And again, families are, they want these options. They want to have these choices available to them. In addition to the magnet schools, we also operate a number of programs and services for the other students in the member districts. Within the EMID collaborative, there's about 75,000 students. That's a lot of kids, and only about 1,000 of them attend the 2 EMID magnet schools. But as you heard from St. Paul earlier, we have about 13,000 St. Paul students that participate in some form of a program connected with EMID, whether that's a classroom partnership, whether that's participating in the EMID after-school programs, summer programs. And for those 13,000 St. Paul students, there are an equal number of suburban students. So we serve almost a third of the students in the EMID collaborative are experiencing some kind of an integrated learning experience. The youth programs that we offer are everything from programs called, we have social justice theater programs, we have Future Educators of America programs, those are after school programs. We have programs that are available during the summer, and students from all 10 districts, multi-district programming available to those students. We have students that feel like these programs meet a need for them. They talk about the programs that they should be available for all students, and parents also see a value in this inter-district programming. We also offer programs for educators. We have professional development that we offer for educators, something we call technical assistance, where our staff goes out and supports our member district staff on equity issues that they're working on. And then we also, as was mentioned earlier, support the Multicultural Resource Center in St. Paul. That resource is available for all 10 of our member districts. There's resources, curriculum resources, professional development resources. Students can attend the center. It's a terrific resource for all of our members. And teachers see a value in these experiences, not only the professional development, but the student programs as well. Our members we have different members, different types of members within the East Metro Integration District. We have racially isolated districts, we have adjoining districts, and we have voluntary districts. West St. Paul Mendota Heights Union is one of our districts that happens to have a racially identifiable school within their boundaries. And as a result of that, they've developed that school into a magnet school, an environmental magnet. And so our districts are doing a variety of different things to address the equity issues within their districts and to do inter-district activities as well. St. Paul is one of our racially isolated districts, and Stillwater is one of our voluntary districts. Those two districts together have served over 2,000 students in classroom partnerships. These are partnerships that happen during the school day, and students connect, they actually physically meet, but they also connect electronically as well. And so those are opportunities that that we can provide. And then Roseville is one of our adjoining districts, and they've done a lot of work within their district to develop what they call an equity vision to really drive all of the policies and procedures from the board all the way down to the classroom. So we really feel like at East Metro, it is about working together, and it's about academic achievement, it's about interracial student contact, cultural proficiency, civic engagement. All of those things are integration in action. And so we're happy to stand for questions from Chair Dominguez.
Well, thank you for your presentation. Are there any questions from the committee representatives?
Just a quick comment, and this, all the presentations is the first one to raise the issue of the voluntary school district participation, and as an East Metro person whose children have actually over the years participated in EMED programs, including one that with the is it Stillwater is the voluntary or the
Stillwater
yeah,
one of them.
Stillwater. A few years ago, my son participated in a, it was like a week camp program with the Stillwater School District. And so I want to be real sensitive to that because obviously there's been value, I think, that's been added as a result of that voluntary participation. The auditor raises some concerns about, you know, perhaps putting, you know, some kind of a box around that. But my question actually is that I had heard that the dynamics, maybe I'm wrong, but that the enrollment dynamics had changed relative to Stillwater, so that Stillwater need not be a voluntary district anymore. Is that true?
Representative Mariani, Chair Dominguez, there has been a change recently with regard to Stillwater status in relation to North St. Paul.
Okay.
Maplewood Oakdale. North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale is now a racially isolated district under the rule.
Okay.
So there is a greater than 20% projected class student difference between those two districts. That's what has changed, not the relationship to St. Paul or to any other district. District 622 is also racially isolated from Matamidi Schools, District 832. So that's a relatively recent dynamic in the past year or two. Those districts now have some decisions to make about whether they form another collaborative or stay within EMID's collaborative to accomplish this work. And we're trying to be of assistance to them in sorting out their options and their issues. So, yes, their status could change depending on the decisions that District 622 might make.
I think it's just informative that, you know, as our state's demographics continue to rapidly change, that a few years ago we were talking about a very clear, you know, line between some of your districts and among some of your districts, and in short order, you know, that line's become you know, much more fuzzier. And on the plus side, which you then therefore have by voluntary participation, is several years under their belt of being involved in other districts in this collaborative way. working on the goals of the integration rule.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're running out of time here, but I have just one quick question here to Dr. Wallstrom. Real quickly, in your mind, you mentioned a design model. What would that model look like if you had to tell us? Real quickly.
Chair Dominguez, what I was referring to dealt with evaluation, program evaluation design. And we have all the colleges and most of our districts working in this area have put together, I think, a very legitimate and authentic attempt at measuring the outcomes of our efforts. But the truth is, none of us have really discovered, in my opinion, the best way to collect this data and to show how those outcomes change over time. The superintendent, Freddie Superintendent, talked about being patient, and we need to give these programs a chance. And yet, I agree with that, but I think that there are elements of best practice around the country that we ought to be looking at with regard to measuring outcomes. That's the design that I'm looking for around evaluation, program evaluation.
Okay. Thank you, and I appreciate your concerns. And
thank you for your attention. Thank you for your questions.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is Jim Grafoff from the Minneapolis Public Schools. Sorry, it's taken quite a long time. We might go over a little bit, so hopefully we can get to this. And we have three other individuals that are still on the agenda, so welcome. And if you would please say what district you're from and your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Jim Grafoff, representing Minneapolis Schools, and I'm joined by Jackie Turner, our Director of Student Placement. Appreciate being here. We've probably reached a point in the agenda where everything's been said, but not by everybody. So I'll try and cut to the chase here. I've got two handouts. One is a map of what we think the work looks like, and the other is just our student placement guide for high school. I've asked Ms. Turner to join me because as Director of Student Placement, she is very knowledgeable about all these issues, and while I am merely conversant, so when you're in the Q&A part, we get a vacant, transparent, glazed over look in my eyes. We'll turn to Ms. Turner, who will quickly and efficiently answer all your questions. We start out in that background piece and just say, Minneapolis is the reason we have integration revenue. A lawsuit in 72, settled in 73, resulted in a request to the legislature for a grant to fund an integration plan. We operated under that plan with court supervision for 10 years from 73 to 83. And then at that point, when we were released from court supervision, because we were going to be operating our plan after 10 years under a new DSEG rule administered by the State Department of Education. But things have moved along in the course of human events since 83, and you know, we began voluntary inter-district desegregation efforts, which became WEMEP, and you've heard from Dr. Jett about our efforts there. And then the WEMEP became the template for the settlement of the NAACP lawsuit, which gave rise to the Choice of Yours program. So integration has never remained static, and we've been pretty much at the center of the history and of the activity around integration efforts in the state of Minnesota. So our GSEC plan today is outlined in the rest of the document. We rely on informed parental choice, our student placement centers, marketing materials like the handout you just have, and if anyone is curious or can't see, you should visit our award-winning website for student placement. It's a great tool for our parents and students. We have, if no one's busy Saturday, join us at our student placement fair at the Hyatt downtown on Nicollet Avenue. See? Yep. Ms. Turner's already helping me out. Then we'll have a Northside fair. We have the Interdistrict Choice is Yours program, which, as Dr. Jett mentioned, we have about 2,100 students from Minneapolis in suburban schools with transportation as part of a voluntary, actually it's part of our DSEG plan, the settlement agreement on the NAACP lawsuit was a four-year deal expiring in 2004-05, and here we are in 2008. We have the informed parental choice is students are choosing magnet schools and community schools. We have about half of our students are enrolled in either magnet schools, the other half in community schools. And one thing we observe, and Ms. Turner is famous for saying at conferences around the state and nation, is sometimes choice leads to segregation. It's important to be clear about that, that our community schools, where they serve a neighborhood where it's segregated, we find that parents often are choosing the school in their community, even though there's a disproportionate or overrepresentative, but it represents the community that they reside in. But the integration revenue, and I should back up a little bit and say, the integration revenue we receive from the state supports a portion of the work on the handout you just received. We actually do more integration activity than we code to our integration revenue accounts, so we're spending about $3 million. I might have a little bit more than $3.3 million per year more on integration activities than we receive in integration revenue. Where we find, because of school choice, we have community schools that wind up on a racially isolated under the current rule, we're investing in rigorous academic programs for those schools. We have closed racially isolated schools. We have fresh started racially isolated schools, putting in new leadership and teams and staff. On our north side, where we have most of our racially isolated schools, we've got an initiative to really invest in academic quality, in behavior, in expanded transportation, making sure we have lower class sizes, counseling, language arts. I am flying through this so I can get to the Office of Legislative Auditor comments. Work on bringing our community together around the schools, and focus on identifying, you know, we have a lot of data on student achievement and performance. We have our NCLE testing, we have our internal Northwest Area Level test, and winnowing and sifting that data, finding teachers and school sites that are beating the odds and learning from those and taking that learning and applying it, replicating that learning, replicating our success. That's a key component of our Northside initiative. We do QCOM for MNTAP, our teacher pay reform that actually the governor's had, and it's been a governor's initiative. It's something we've been working on in our contract process as a key teacher quality piece that helps us put quality teachers in our schools. And that, while it's not an integration-funded activity, we view it as a key component to close achievement gaps. And all of our racially isolated schools identified in 05, 06 are now QCOM schools or have been closed. So it's a key initiative for us. We have anti-racism training, parent and family community involvement, and then a district-wide accountability plan and principal evaluation. I've flown through that slide, that handout, and I'm going to go to our comments on the Office of Legislative Auditor report on integration revenue. And generally, we review the report favorably to the extent that the auditor's report identifies that there's a lack of focus or clarity about the purpose of integration revenue for desegregation. We find that hasn't been our experience in Minneapolis, and it's not to say that that's other people's experience, and I know the report, I would just say operating under court supervision for 10 years and being a leader in integration and desegregation for the past 20 or 30 years, while we have a bunch of different activities, pretty much we have been funding lower class size at magnet schools and transportation supporting parent choice. That's been our focus all along. We are adding in other layers in terms of teacher quality, and the other activities in the handout I already discussed at a rapid rate. But our integration program as such has not changed, and it's been, I think there's a pretty good understanding of what we're doing with it. That being said, and I think it was Chairperson Dominguez who said, we have a school district that is now 73% students of color, and we're getting 21, I guess, for It's 19.5 growth, 607, about 19.5 million in integration revenue. What are we giving a district integration revenue for when you're 73% students of color? I mean, there is a larger issue about how do we integrate within our district boundaries when we're down to 27% white students. Mary Gilbert from St. Paul Schools discussed, and I guess my initial answer to the question I just posed is, that's why we've been so active and engaged in inter-district boundary voluntary integration efforts prior to the NAACP lawsuit with Choice of Yours, and Dr. Jett already discussed kind of the variable data we're getting out of academic performance under Choice of Yours. 1 year showing really strong performance for Minneapolis students in Choice of Yours. The next year, the students in Minneapolis are a matched cohort are outperforming those participating in Choice of Yours. So the data bounces, and it's hard to get an apples-to-apples comparison. And I think it was Representative Mariani who was asking the question, do we want to have additional accountability for the revenue? And I think my swing at that question would be, and maybe I'm moving to answering your questions before you're asking them, I think we have... If the accountability measures are assessment, I think we have enough assessment through the NCLB instruments or the internal assessments already using it. I think if the question is, do we want MDE to exercise more audit and a greater audit function or provide more support, we're open to that. I think we've been a leader in actually advancing the work, and we think the department does great work, and if you want the department to do more work, we'd welcome that, and you're going to have to support it with the resources to do that. I'd agree with Ms. Gilbert that it's not, I think it was actually by design in the first DSEG rule that the first class cities were exempted from program review. There's budget approval, not program review. I think there's thinking, and in spite of my appearance, I wasn't at the table in 1983, so I can't, I'm just reasoning from the fact that we were exempted from program review. I think Ms. Gilbert's comment was you may not want a line by MDE do an line by line review of our expenditures. We're happy to talk with people about the work we're doing, but it would get a lot more resources. Anyway, the accountability is we have those NCLB measures, we have our internal measures, and we have basically a 30-year history in the field doing the work and providing leadership. To the extent that the current formula has unintended consequences, originally this was a grant, the original funding for the Minneapolis DSEG plan was a grant from the state to MCS to fulfill the cost of the DSEG plan. That was converted to a per pupil amount. In the handout, I think I have mid-1990s. As I sit here, I'm thinking it was like 98 or 99, but that's knowable and discernible. We were in a phase at the legislature of converting everything to per pupil funding formulas. One could go back to funding integration grants to districts for the activities that are approved in the plan. That would be and you avoid maybe some of the unintended consequences that the auditor's report discusses. I think there's some integration issues beyond the auditor's report that I'd just like to highlight or telegraph, and that is we continue to be a racially segregated metropolitan area, and we have more integration issues across the state. We need to recognize, at least in Minneapolis, and I think around the state, we've embraced choice as an instrument to desegregate, and in Minneapolis, and I think others will find, is it choice, is it two-edged sword? There are times and places where choice leads to segregation, and we have to grapple with that. We've done that by investing in academic rigor and quality, teacher quality, in those places where we find choice leads to integration. That's been in our plan and it's been approved, but I think I just want to be explicit and articulate, hopefully, about that. I think we have some issues where we confuse, confound, or integration issues with ELL issues, and I think that's maybe I'll just leave that on the table, and I think Representative Mariani and Representative Dominguez can understand that. The definition we have, and I think Ms. Gilbert already mentioned this, we have a white, non-white rule. And in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and in growing numbers of districts around the state, we have diverse school sites that have a low white enrollment, but they're very diverse. They're racially isolated under the current rule. We could look at that. So beyond the OLA report, I think it's a good idea to go back and look at the rule. I really appreciated Professor Lavorato's testimony to this subgroup earlier, where she was talking about maybe we should try and just enforce and work the existing rule. It sounded a little bit to me like Mohandas Gandhi's answer to the question when asked, what do you think of Western civilization? His response was, I think it would be a very good idea. Maybe we just need to enforce the rule we have, and I'm actually not well-versed or knowledgeable enough in the rule and the legal underpinnings of the rule to ascertain or tell you with authority that the issues I've addressed don't have the can't be done under the current rule, but I'd welcome looking at it, and I'd be happy to sit for any questions.
Thank you for your presentation. Sorry, I had to cut you off there because we're running out of time here. Have any questions from Representative Mariani? None. He says none. So.
All right. I have one question.
I had a question, but I think you already answered that one with the choice.
Okay.
And so that's the one I had as far as. And we will be looking at all the. I wrote down several things that you recommended, so I'm not going to ask those again.
All right.
So thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
We welcome
much.
Comments. Next on the list is Sharon Peters-Harden. She's the coordinator from the Department of Equity and Integration, Osseo School District.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Chairman Dominguez and members of the committee, my name is Sharon Peters-Harden. I'm with Osseo Area School District 279. I'm the coordinator of our Department of Equity and Integration, and with me is Ann Kern, our Assistant Director of Student Support Services. So thank you for the opportunity to present some information tonight about our program. As you members of the committee know, we are a member district of the Northwest Suburban Integration School District, and we have been a member of that collaborative since 2001. So I'd just like to start off talking a little bit about how we work with the collaborative in terms of our integration plan and how we work within our intra-district plan. As you know, we have 10 racially identifiable schools in our district, and back in 2001, Osseo Area Schools was identified as having 11 racially identifiable schools. Since then, we have worked through Northwest Suburban in developing magnet schools as a vehicle of choice for our district to try and achieve racial integration. Well, within our intra-district plan, what we have focused on through the years since 2001 is how do we create racially balanced schools and how do we create more racially integrated learning environments. So part of the efforts that we've engaged in to do that within the district is that we have worked to increase our enrollment options program. We've learned a lot in the years since 2001. I think it's been a good learning process, even though I haven't been with the district since that effort started. I think we've learned a lot, though, as we've engaged in looking at integration efforts in our district. We've since, just recently last year, opened a new enrollment center, which is really targeting more directed outreach to families within our district in our racially identifiable schools particularly. And what's been interesting over the last 7 years is that we've seen more racial balance on the west side of our district than schools that were predominantly monocultural. And we believe that that is due to the efforts through our enrollment options program, as well as our school choice program through Northwest Suburban Collaborative, as well as our magnet schools. So while those schools have become increasingly diverse, we still have not maintained or attempted to target that goal that we would like to see, which is 42% in all of our schools throughout the district. As a result of a recent levy and the impact of the outcome of the levy decision, we are currently looking at some boundary changes in our district, which we believe are going to have a significant impact on a couple of our schools. We're looking at perhaps closing two schools and redrawing some boundary lines. So we know that will have an impact. We're on the last year of our current plan. We're convening a community collaboration council to give us input on as to what the new integration plan should look like. In terms of the goals of our current program, we have four goals in our program, under our plan. Goal number one is to provide staff development. Goal number two is to create and sustain our magnet schools. Goal number three, under the original plan, was to establish a cultural liaison program. And goal number four was to hire and retain staff of color. So we're going to reexamine those goals, receive input from the community, and look at what direction we need to head for a new plan that will align with the strategic plan initiatives that are currently in place as a result of a strategic planning process this district engaged in last year. So in terms of how we use our dollars, we support students in our district by targeting services in our schools that are racially imbalanced or racially isolated, by providing increased student support services. We do have student learning advocates in our schools that work with our human services team to provide interventions for our students, particularly our students who may be bilingual and multi-ethnic students in the school, although we serve all students. We don't refuse services to any students. So we provide family services through our bilingual cultural liaison program, which works with our families in the district, works through our enrollment center to do outreach, to do parent education type of programs, to attend IEP meetings, much like most of the other larger districts that provide language services. We also support our students through after-school programming, through summer programming. We have classroom partnerships, and we also use that as a target for an equity goal so that we're reaching students to create integrated learning environments who otherwise would not be provided opportunities. As well as we have another, what we call an equity goal, of providing student assistance to some of our students in our racially isolated schools who are enrolled in advanced placement, high performance classes. And what we do is work with those students to provide additional tutoring. We provide a student learning advocate that meets regularly with those students. And those students, our students who have taken the test for HP or advanced placement, didn't pass the test, but we're providing access for those classes as well. So we try to support our students in an equitable manner. And we expect that we're going to have some different changes in the district once we realign our boundaries. In terms of the recommendations, I would just like to provide a little feedback on our intra-district plan, the legislative auditor's recommendations. We support the establishment of criteria to be used within districts, and particularly the evaluation of programs. We welcome MDE's input on what the criteria for that evaluation should look like. But we believe that because integration in and of itself is a very complex issue, when you look at belonging to a member collaborative like Northwest and talking about transporting students from an environment in Brooklyn Park to perhaps a school in Buffalo, along with that comes many, many challenges culturally, linguistically, socioeconomically, that make it a very complex issue. So the mere transporting of students to attain numbers is really not something that we subscribe to, but we do subscribe to the establishment of criteria against which we can evaluate our efforts. Another recommendation that we support is that the revenue expenditures, we believe that there should be flexibility because larger districts like Osseo do belong to integration collaboratives. And so our money is used to support not only the work of the integration collaborative, we support the work of our magnet schools, and we support the work of the additional programs to support our students in the district. We also would like to support that the recommendation that MDE really needs to look at the criteria that we're using for integration, because as I said, we can look over a period of time from 2001 to 2007. Our schools on the west side of our district are becoming more racially diverse, which over time is going to really result in a racially balanced school. And so where we have to continue to focus those efforts because of concentrations of poverty, housing patterns, and many things that are oftentimes beyond our control is really on those schools where those higher concentrations of students of color are located. And so I would welcome any questions that you have about the information that we've presented. And
thank you for your presentation. Representative Mariani, do you have
a question? When do you expect the new plan to be developed and forwarded for Senate?
Our integration plan?
Yes.
It is actually due to the department by June 30th, but we now have a date of April 15th, I believe, of this year. So we're working currently to obtain input from the community, looking at lessons learned and what is our next generation of integration efforts going to look like in the district.
So this plan will most likely look pretty different from your existing plan because of the number of dynamics you pointed out in your...
We anticipate that it will, because one of the things that will be reflected in that plan will be those boundary changes.
Yes.
And even though that's only two schools that we're targeting, that's really going to make a significant, we believe, a significant impact on that. So that will be a part of the plan, as well as looking at some other outreach efforts. One of the things that we've established is a specialty program at one of our magnet schools, and that's to attract students of poverty into our IB programming. So we're looking more at efforts like that for our intra-district plan, because one of the things that we've discovered with the Integration Collaborative is it's very hard to get elementary students bused across two or three districts, and our geographic region in our district is very large. But one of the things that we do know, too, is that the concentration of most of our students of color are in our elementary schools. So we need to be more proactive in developing programs that will attract students within our district so the parents feel safe about transporting their students, particularly, you know, at early and odd times of the morning and the evening. So I expect that we'll see more efforts geared towards programming like that.
Any other questions? Thank you, Representative Carlos Mariani. One quick question again concerning the auditor's report as far as the revenue is concerned, and you made mention difficulties with transferring students. Keep in mind, this revenue is integration revenue to do that, to integrate students into the districts. And you made a comment about that is going to be a little difficult to do.
Maybe could I make a clarification?
Yeah.
I don't think I said it was difficult to do. I said I think it's difficult for parents to make the choice, because we do have a choice, voluntary choice in our district, to bus children out of our district. So we have the within our intra-district plan is what I was saying, that we would use the revenue to provide the type of support for parents to make increased choices.
Okay.
So I may have misstated that or not been clear about that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, thank you for coming, and we appreciate your presentation. And again, we're looking forward to some good guidelines here.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda, and please hold with us. We got two more people that would like to present. We have Teresa Graham. She's a licensed social worker, and she's down to 5 minutes. And then we have Roger Banks, also from the Minnesota Council on Black Minnesota. So, Teresa, you have 5 minutes because folks really want to wrap this up. So, thank you for coming, and if you would just present your name. And
thank you. My name is Teresa Graham. It's misspelled on the agenda. It's T-E-R-E-S-A. And I'm a licensed independent clinical social worker for the state of Minnesota, as well as a school social worker, too. I addressed you briefly at the last meeting, so I'll try and keep my comments short. Since there's so many of the members that are missing today, I'm going to send this summary to you in writing in more detail. But I did want to update you on two things. One is I am the former coordinator of integration and equity for the Lakeville Public Schools. And so I have some firsthand knowledge of this, as well as 30 years of experience in the field of social work, 16 years in schools, and the rest in nonprofits and public and private agencies. Anyway, I've had an opportunity to do some research on some of the questions we talked about last time. And two things I just would like to mention. One is I would encourage you, and I'm going to email you this spreadsheet that I finally received yesterday after much ado from the Department of Education. It's not on their website. It's an internal document, but it is public information. It lists all of the school districts that received the integration revenue funding from 2002 through 2009 forecast, with the amounts that they're receiving, and it kind of gives a really good overview that this is increasing, and it's going to increase dramatically in the next year or two. So I would really urge you to look at the financial piece of this when you're looking at the program piece of it. And this is available. One of my frustrations has been in trying to obtain public information. The department makes it extremely difficult to do so, particularly for me. And I would like for you to, you know, look at that issue of trying to get all of the comprehensive information. I'd like to address two big issues in the OL, in the Office of the Legislative Auditor's Report, that I think are particularly salient. I actually agree with most of the issues in the report that have been designated. I have a concern that this report was issued back in November of 2005, and nothing has happened since it was issued to sort of change the picture. In fact, it's really gotten worse. There's a financial disincentive for districts to desegregate and integrate their programs because then the money goes away. And as you've heard today, there's competition for students. There's a lot of sensitivity about these issues. Some of these programs that the people talked about today are wonderful programs. They're doing great work. But the whole system really needs to be overhauled. I didn't hear much talk today about desegregation and integration, which is why we're here. We're here, and the intent and purpose of this is to integrate. And not to plug holes in budgets that are short-shrifted because of other reasons, but actually to address the issues of integration and equity for all the children. And that's what I'd really like you to look at, is the bigger picture here. And I'll address that more in my written comments to you. One of the things that I wanted to talk about today is, because I have had some experiences with the Minnesota Department of Education, and you're talking about giving them, you know, needing to have more oversight of the program. As of yesterday, Mr. Nyambwe is the only identified staff person at the Minnesota Department of Education who's overseeing over 100 programs and $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
He does a great job. He's very knowledgeable. He's one person. There used to be two people, but his colleague took another job, and that has not been refilled. I believe that position has not been refilled, is what I was told yesterday. His supervisor today is in, Gloria Kibble is in, the supervisor of that program and many other programs is in Philadelphia on yet another conference, which it's difficult to reach her, and the Assistant Commissioner Karen Cleansing seemed to go to a lot of out-of-state conferences. Leona Dearden, the director of the program, is on an extended medical leave.
So this is not a good situation when Ms. Nwembe is the only person to address these huge issues and this large amount of money. There's very little oversight going on, not because he isn't a knowledgeable person. He is doing a great job, but he's one person. And I think you could give them 10 people, and it's not going to work because the actual legislation is a problem in and of itself. That's what the Office of Legislative Auditor was trying to tell you, and that's what's happening. As these programs expand, there's one other thing I just would, because I have interviewed several districts who are new to these programs this year and next year, and there's an increasing resistance by some of the suburbs and the exurbs to participating in these programs. For a number of reasons. Some of them have to do with institutional racism and the makeup of the communities. You heard a lot about that from Myron Orfield the last time we were here, and I really hope you listened to Representative Orfield's comments because, in my opinion, as an experienced professional and having integral knowledge of all of these issues for 30 years, nothing changes if nothing changes. I think the legislature needs to take a very comprehensive look and perhaps gut this legislation, start over, do not do away with it. Yes, some of these programs are very valuable programs.
Excuse me, you're going to have to wrap up.
Okay. Just wanted to mention, I'll write to you in more detail about the districts that are anticipating problems, but I just wanted to give you one example. This year is a planning year for the Prior Lakes district was identified as a racially adjoining district with Burnsville, which is a racially isolated district. Burnsville schools asked Prior Lake to join their program. Prior Lake said no. They're going to join Shakopee and Jordan, who are also two new districts identified. I've interviewed people in all of those districts, and the Prior Lake person said that they haven't had a lot of time to address this year because of their levy problem and the other problems they're having. But that they chose to work with Shakopee and Jordan because they're, quote, more like us, unquote. You know, they have a lot of African Americans in Burnsville, and we have the Russians out here. I think that kind of statement is incredible coming from a student services coordinator who's going to be responsible for developing an integration program. And it kind of gives me the chill. Burnsville is actually doing a very good job. Lakeville doesn't have a program. We're supposed to be working with them, but Burnsville has... is actually working very hard, but nobody wants to come to the dance with them. And so there's a lot of problems here that need to be addressed, and I'll give you more of the details in writing.
Thank you. Thank you for your report.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is Roger Banks from the Minnesota Council on Black Minnesotans. Thank you, sir, for attending the meeting. Would you please...
When is that?
My name is Roger Banks. I'm the Policy and Research Analyst for the State Council on Black Minnesotans. And I'm here today just to provide some comments, not a presentation. The first comment has to do with us offering our services. And that is by us, I mean all the councils of color. The Chicano Latino, the American Indian, the Asian Pacific Council, and the Council on Black Minnesotans. In a concerted effort to address those issues that were raised by the report, the audit report of the auditor. I really have to say that I was struck by a phenomenon here, and it's what I call a Minnesota phenomenon. And that is that there were only two individuals who mentioned race at all. And how can you have an integrated program without effectively dealing with individual and institutional racism? How can you have a strong and academic program in Minnesota unless you do deal in a concentrated fashion with the issue of race and racism? Because it is because of these institutional aspects that we are in the position that we're in. We would like to offer our assistance to the legislature as well as to the Department of Education, particularly as it pertains to the evaluation component, because we feel that First of all, what has to happen is greater clarity regarding the intentions, the desired outcomes, etc., have to be really specified by the legislature. But secondly, it's really critical that the Department of Education have the ability and authority and resources needed to do the kind of monitoring and evaluation that's necessary. As was pointed out by the last speaker, significant dollars are spent in this particular area, and historically we've not gotten any kind of real evaluation from these particular. In fact, at the conference that was held last year at the University of Minnesota, it was a statewide conference on the Integrated Revenue Initiative, none of the programs had really done anything as it pertains to evaluating their efforts. They may have done something relative to internal evaluations, but I'm speaking of a two-tiered evaluation process. One that takes into consideration the desired objectives of the initiative itself, which could include achievement gap issues or whatever. But there has to be something that all of the entities who receive funding are working towards. And then you have your specific evaluation mechanism that is designed to evaluate the actual program impact, the impact that the program is having on the issue of integration, the issue of whatever is being desired, what the desired outcomes might be. And so what I'd like to say essentially is that it's really critical that we have this, make this a truly community effort. Unfortunately, historically, we have tried to resolve educational problems in an education silo. And as a result, we've not made much progress. And so what I'm suggesting essentially is that the councils of color in particular be involved in both working with the legislature to deal with some of the issues raised by the audit report, and particularly encouraging the legislature to conduct a really comprehensive assessment of what's going on so you can review and really make some determinations, start from scratch, if you will, in terms of dealing with these kinds of issues, because we have limited resources. And unfortunately, from my perspective, a lot of the monies that have been generated and spent have been spent to feel good. You know, we need a true definition of what cultural competence is. That is, it has to include the variables of institutional inclusiveness. It has to include the variables of multiculturalism and the value of multiculturalism. But it certainly has to include the values associated with individual and institutional racism.
Thank you. Is there any other comment? We're trying to wrap up. Thank you, Roger Banks, for coming up and expressing those
my pleasure. And
kind of words.
Remember that we are available, and really this is a sincere offer to provide you with any kind of assistance that we can.
Thank you very much. At that, I believe we went through our list. I appreciate each and every one of you coming. We are going to take everything that was said today in consideration. We'd like to put some legislation to this coming session, and so we will probably be contacting you on some other ideas. So thanks again, Representative Mariani.
Just let me say very quickly, and more for the audience, because there's only two of us here, that I thought this was a well-structured hearing. I learned quite a bit here, and I think that you and I will certainly work really hard to connect with our colleagues about what we learned here. I took furious notes, so did our staff. We want to circle back to all the folks who participated here today as we continue to look at possible action in this coming session. Well, thank you for such a good hearing, and I appreciate folks for hanging around past our scheduled adjournment time.
Thank you for that comment, Representative Mariani, and that is why we have an audio going on right now, because we want to make sure our colleagues heard everything that's going on with the districts and the comments, concerns, because we really want to come out with something that's meaningful. And again, we're taking everything in consideration. With that, the meeting's adjourned.